felt herself stumble and lose her balance. A moment later, there was nothing but empty space before she hit the frigid water and sank beneath the surface. "Get him to the boat," Renlu ordered in Cantonese to the two men with him. He turned and strode down the dock, his gaze searching for the woman who had yelled at him. He silently cursed. It had taken longer than he had expected to extract the old man. The rest of the dock was empty, thanks to the coming storm and time of year. His gaze swept over the bicycle. It was obvious that the woman had just come from the market. He wondered which boat she was on, and if there was anyone else that he would have to kill. He stopped and stared down at the dark water. Normally, it would be clear enough to see almost to the bottom, but the rough water and the dark cloud cover made it impossible to see more than a few feet below the surface. The temperature of the water was still warm enough to survive, but he had shot the woman in the center of the back, between her shoulder blades. More than likely, the bullet had severed her spine or punctured her heart. Either way, she would be dead. He waited several precious minutes, searching and listening for any unusual sounds in the wind before he finally turned, satisfied that she was dead. He ignored the rain that began to fall. Within a matter of minutes, he was on the speedboat that had been docked a few berths down from the sailboat. He glanced back once over his shoulder, a frown creasing his brow as he stared at the receding line of the marina. He would have felt better if he had actually seen the woman's body. He hated loose ends. Turning back toward the bow of the speeding boat, he decided he would send a man to locate the woman's body and dispose of it. For now, he had a package to deliver to his employer. Michaela clamped her lips tightly together to prevent the air in her lungs from escaping. She allowed the weight of the backpack to pull her down below the surface of the water. Once she felt sure that she was down far enough not to be seen, she struggled to push the straps weighing her down off her shoulders and let it drop to the bottom. Kicking her legs, she swam underwater until she could make out one of the pillars holding up the dock. Only then did she slowly release the air she was holding and silently rise to the surface. It took every bit of her scuba diving training not to gasp out for air once she reached the surface. Instead, she treaded water, keeping her head above the waves, and peered through the slats in the dock. Just as she feared, a moment later she saw the dark shadow of a man in black. He stood on the dock above her, staring down at the water. She could see the black gun clenched firmly in his hand. Michaela swallowed, fear threatening to drown her more than the choppy salt water. It seemed like forever before the man turned and walked away. She swam under the dock, trying to get a glimpse of the man whenever he crossed one of the drainage grates. There wouldn't be anything she could do, but she hoped for some sign that her grandfather was still alive. She gripped a mooring line that was hanging down to hold herself in place when she saw the man jump down onto a speedboat. She couldn't see much of it, but she memorized every inch of what she could see, as well as the man who had taken Henry and shot at her. A few minutes later, the boat was speeding across the bay. Michaela swam further down and grabbed another line. She didn't bother trying to climb out yet. She didn't want to take a chance on being seen and the men coming back. Only when she could no longer see the boat did she swim back to the nearest boat with a dive platform on it. It took several tries before she was able to kick herself far enough out of the water to roll onto it. Her wet clothes were heavy and tried to suck her down. Her back throbbed from where the bullet had struck her. She was just thankful that it had become lodged in one of the items that filled her backpack, probably one of the numerous canned goods or the slab of pork that she had purchased. With difficulty, Michaela rolled onto her hands and knees before using the engine to help pull herself to a standing position. She was freezing, especially now that she was out of the water and the wind and the rain were in full force. Her teeth chattered, and her body felt clumsy when she reached for the ladder. Forcing her body to move, she climbed up onto the dock. For a few precious seconds, her mind debated if she should run or if she should go to the Defiance. Finally, it was the freezing cold wind and rain that turned her toward the sailboat. She needed to get dry and warm. Already, she could see the tips of her fingers turning blue.
"Old man, what happened?"
Michaela whispered, half climbing, half falling onto the Defiance.
"What did those men want?"
Michaela didn't stay in the shower too long. She was afraid that the men might come back. She wanted to wash the salt water off her, and she needed to get warm. The hot shower was the fastest and easiest way to accomplish both tasks. She quickly rinsed the soap from her hair and body before turning off the shower. Grabbing the towel, she dried her body before leaning over and wrapping the towel around her hair. It didn't take her long to dress in a fresh pair of panties, jeans, thick socks, bra, t-shirt, and heavy dark blue sweater. Slowly opening the door, she listened before peeking out of the head. Only when she was satisfied that she was alone did she step out. She bent and grabbed a pair of black hiking boots out from the storage cabinet under the bed. She sat down on the bench seat by the table and quickly slid her feet into them, weaving the laces through the hooks and tying them. Her hands trembled when she saw the bloodstain on the floor near her wet clothes. Standing up, she walked over to the dark red stain and knelt. Her fingers hovered over the spot, but she didn't touch it. She glanced around the cabin. The men had been wearing gloves, so she doubted there would be any fingerprints. She needed to notify the police. Her fingers reached for the small purse that she always wore. It was soaked from her dunking in the water. She grabbed it off the floor. Turning, she pulled the towel off her head and spread it over the table. Her fingers trembled as she twisted the catch on her purse. Lifting it, she dumped the contents out onto the towel. Most of the things would be all right once they dried. Michaela patted the end of the towel over her cell phone, wallet, and other miscellaneous items. Luckily, her cell phone was one of the new waterproof ones. Picking it up, she realized that she didn't have a clue how to contact the police in Hong Kong. Shoving the items back into her purse, she pulled the strap over her head and draped it across herself. She reached for one of the rain slickers that Henry kept near the steps leading up to the wheelhouse, pulled it on, and fastened it before pulling the hood up over her tangled hair. Seconds later, she was tossing the soaked bags of wet groceries through the entrance of the companionway and onto the bench seat. Once the bike was empty of the heavy weight, she pushed it down the dock and jumped on. Several minutes later, and a frantic plea with the security guard, Michaela was in a taxi heading to the nearest police department. Chapter 7. Michaela rubbed her arms as a blast of chilly air swept through the door when it opened. She turned her head to watch two police officers guiding a very angry man and a pregnant woman into the room and up to the front desk. Despair filled her at the thought of how much time had passed already since the incident down at the marina.
"Mrs. Summerlin," a voice called out.
Michaela started when she heard her name and quickly rose to her feet. She tucked her hair back behind her ear and walked forward to the man standing near a swinging door. She stopped and waited when another officer called out to him. The man quickly answered the other officer before turning to look at her again with an apologetic smile.
"Mrs. Summerlin?" the police officer asked.
"Miss, I'm not married," Michaela replied.
"Miss Summerlin, please follow me," the officer said in a polite voice. "Detective Wu will take your statement."
"Thank you,"
Michaela whispered softly.
"Detective Wu is one of our finest," the officer assured her, stepping in front of a small office and waving for her to enter. "She will be with you in just a moment."
Michaela nodded and entered the room. She slid down into a hard, dark wood chair, suddenly exhausted. Her hand trembled and she clenched it. She would not fall apart. It wouldn't help. Henry was in trouble, and she needed to keep herself under control. Drawing in a deep breath, Michaela focused on regaining her composure. After several deep breaths, she glanced down at her hand. It had stopped shaking. She would handle this just like she had handled the other difficult situations in her life, by staying calm and doing what needed to be done. Falling apart left you vulnerable and weak. She had learned that at a very, very young age.
She glanced over her shoulder when the door behind her opened again, and a seemingly delicate woman, who was probably only a few years older than Michaela, stepped into the room. The woman didn't say anything. She walked past Michaela before pulling out the chair behind the desk and sitting down. She opened the file with the paperwork that Michaela had filled out. Michaela silently studied the woman while she read over the report. The woman made several notes, glanced up at her a few times, before making several more notations. Since she wasn't familiar with police protocols in Hong Kong, Michaela decided it was better to remain quiet until the woman spoke.
"My name is Detective Helen Wu," the woman finally said, laying the pen in her hand down on the folder and staring at Michaela with a curious, intelligent gaze. "You are Michaela Summerlin?"
Yes, Michaela started to say. She cleared her throat when her voice broke.
"Yes, that's right. I've come because my grandfather has been kidnapped." "You saw the men who took your grandfather?"
Detective Wu asked. Michaela nodded.
"Yes,"
she said, raising a hand to her throat.
"I'm sorry. I was knocked into the water when the man shot me." "You were shot?"
Detective Wu asked, looking at Michaela with an intense gaze.
"Where?"
"In the back," Michaela replied. "I had just come from the market. I was wearing my backpack. It was filled with canned goods. It is the only thing that saved my life." Detective Wu rose from her seat and walked around the desk.
"May I see your back?"
she asked politely. Michaela nodded and rose. She shrugged off the rain slicker and laid it across the arm of the chair. Next, she gripped the end of her sweater and t-shirt and pulled it upward, keeping her arms crossed in front of her. She watched Detective Wu walk behind her. Once the woman stopped, Michaela glanced over her shoulder.
"It felt like it hit me between the shoulder blades," Michaela said.
A shiver went through her when she felt the gentle touch of fingers between her shoulders. She winced when the fingers slid over a tender area. The woman's fingers froze, and a second later, she was returning to her seat. Michaela frowned and pulled her t-shirt and the sweater down before she sank once again into the hard chair. She pulled the slicker off the arm of the chair and carefully folded it in her lap. Biting her lip, she watched Detective Wu pick up the phone on her desk. She spoke rapidly to the person on the other end. Unfortunately for Michaela, the words were in Cantonese, and she didn't understand a single thing that was being said. Less than a minute later, there was a brisk knock on the door before it opened. The man who had escorted Michaela earlier stepped into the room, carrying a tray with two cups and a steaming pot. He walked over and placed it on the desk before he murmured something to the woman. She nodded and replied before redirecting her attention to Michaela. She carefully poured some of the hot tea into the two cups and held one out for Michaela. Michaela smiled her appreciation and reached for the cup. She shook her head when the woman offered milk and sugar. Sitting back in the chair, she studied the woman.
"Did you see a doctor? There is a very large bruise forming on your back, and the area is red and swollen," Detective Wu asked.
Michaela shook her head.
"No, I knew it wasn't bad enough to see a doctor. I just wanted to get here so I could get help from my grandfather," she said,
sipping the tea to keep from saying anything rude, like quit asking questions and just do something. Detective Wu glanced at the report and looked back at Michaela.
"The report you gave is very detailed, but I would like for you to tell me exactly what happened. Sometimes I'm able to pick up things you may have forgotten or didn't write down," Wu explained.
Michaela drew in a deep, calming breath and lowered the cup to her lap. She wrapped both hands around it, appreciating the warmth from the porcelain. Staring directly into the detective's eyes, she recounted everything that had happened, relaying every detail that she had memorized.
"I'm a scientist," she began. "A marine biologist. It is important to pay attention to details. I left at 1300 hours this afternoon to go to the market for supplies."
Detective Helen Wu listened intently to Michaela Summerlin. Every once in a while, she would pick up the pen and write a note on the summary. She was good at what she did because she listened to the people who came in. She could also tell a lot from their body language, a skill not many of her colleagues had developed. At 28, she was one of the youngest members of the Hong Kong police force to make the rank of detective. The only daughter of a district police administrator and British schoolteacher, she had excelled in all her classes. Her mother had been supportive of her decision to follow in her father's footsteps, though she had felt her mother's concern for her safety. Her father had been slightly less forgiving, drilling her over the dangers and finally taking her under his wing so he could train her himself. Only after she made detective did he finally admit that he was very proud of her, but still worried for her well-being. When the report had been first entered into the system, Officer Wang had immediately notified her of the report and that he was rerouting it directly to her inbox. He had said a young American woman had just reported an incident down at the Royal Hong Kong Yacht Club that involved a kidnapping and shooting. Such acts of violence in an exclusive area could have devastating effects to tourism and the economy. If the area became known for being unsafe, it could quickly create a vacuum for gangs and increased crime. Her responsibility was to take a proactive stance on such crimes and mitigate the situation before it escalated. Over the last decade, crime had continued to decrease with the help of the revitalization of many parts of the city. Helen was very impressed with the woman sitting across from her. She could tell that Michaela was upset, but she had an almost unnatural control of her emotions, especially considering the fact that she should be dead. The bruise on her back proved that she had been very fortunate. If Michaela had not been wearing the backpack filled with canned goods, Helen had no doubt that she would be dealing with a homicide as well as a kidnapping. The shot had been very precise, severed the spine, pierced the heart. It had been a kill shot. The description of the incident left no doubt in Helen's mind that killing her had been the attacker's intent.
Are you aware of anyone your grandfather might have angered? Is he involved in anything illegal? Helen asked, gazing into Michaela's eyes to see if she was telling the truth.
Michaela held her gaze when she answered.
Henry is a little rough around the edges, but he has a good heart, and people recognize that in him. As far as illegal, he is also one of the most honest men you'll ever meet, she replied, her gaze softening. Our family isn't rich. The Defiance looks pitifully out of place in comparison to most of the boats at the marina. So it isn't like he was screaming, I'm wealthy, come take me. Detective Wu, I don't know much about crime. But the man who shot at me, there was something different about him. And I can tell you that the speedboat they were in cost far more than the sailboat my grandfather owned. Something isn't right. I can feel it. I don't know what it is. I just want to find my grandfather.
Helen nodded and stood up.
I would like to see the sailboat, she instructed, picking up the file. Finally, Michaela muttered, with a sigh of relief, and rose to her feet.
Helen chuckled. It was the first uncontrolled response that Michaela had made. Walking to the door, she pulled the long raincoat off the hook and picked up her umbrella. Opening the door, Helen called to Officer Wang.
Please update the information into the system. I've added detailed information about the suspects. I would like for you to run a search and cross-match the description of the speedboat and the man. I would also like to see what you can find out about Henry Summerlin and Miss Summerlin, Helen instructed in Cantonese, handing him the file.
Yes, Detective Wu, Officer Wang replied, taking the file.
Mr. Wang, Helen said, touching his arm. I'll need an expanded search completed. With discretion, of course.
I will personally conduct it myself, Officer Wang assured her with a bow.
Helen turned back to where Michaela was silently waiting, staring intently at them. She smiled reassuringly and nodded to her. With a wave of her hand, she indicated which way they would go.
We will take my car, Helen said. Please follow me.
Michaela nodded and fell into step beside her. Helen slipped her raincoat on and pulled her keys out of the pocket. They walked down several corridors and past offices filled with people. She was used to the hustle and bustle of the precinct. Several people nodded to her when they passed them in the hall, but, like her, they were more focused on dealing with their own issues. What information do you want to know about Henry and me? Michaela suddenly asked, surprising Helen. Helen paused at the exit to the stairwell leading down to the secured parking garage reserved for employees. She turned to stare at Michaela with a raised eyebrow. Tilting her head, she gave her a curious expression.
You understand Cantonese? Helen asked.
Michaela shook her head.
No, I heard you say Henry's in my name to Officer Wang. It wasn't difficult to deduce that you were asking him to find out more about us. It is what I would do, she admitted. I just thought I could speed up the process a little.
Helen chuckled and pushed open the door.
I hope you don't mind the stairs. I detest elevators, Helen replied, starting downward. You are correct in your assumption. I like to have as much information as possible on any case. It is better to be informed so that I can make the right decisions. It would also speed up finding out what happened to your grandfather.
There isn't much to tell, Michaela said, following her. Henry had his own business for years, working on boats. A little over a year ago, he decided to sail around the world. Everyone thought he was crazy, but it was something he's always wanted to do. I've been at college. I've met up with him a few times over the last year to sail with him on portions of his journey. I have a slightly longer break right now, before I head out on my next internship with Harbor Branch Oceanographic, and decided to make the trip from Hong Kong to Hawaii with him. We were supposed to leave this coming weekend, weather permitting.
Helen stopped and turned on the last step, her gaze lifting to lock on Michaela's face. Her eyes widened with sudden recognition, and her lips parted. That was why the name sounded so familiar.
You are Michaela Summerlin. You are the girl who stole her grandfather's sailboat, she whispered, with a combination of awe and disbelief.
Michaela shifted from one foot to the other and glanced down at where she was holding the railing. Helen could see the slight embarrassment on the younger woman's face. Michaela finally nodded.
I don't think I'll ever live that down, she said, with a rueful expression. I was 16.
Helen laughed and turned to the door marked exit. Through the window, the dark interior of the parking garage could be seen. The sky had grown darker outside, and the lights flickered.
I was at university when your adventure went viral, Helen admitted, with a relaxed, warm smile. I was conflicted by which career choice I should follow. I knew my parents wished for me to do something different, but my heart was in solving crimes and making the world a better place. A group of students were talking about what the boy and you were doing. I watched the videos that were posted.
Tyrell called it our voyage of the defiance, Michaela muttered, walking over to the passenger side of the car. She paused and looked over at Helen.
I knew I should have drowned Tyrell. I didn't know he was plastering everything that was going on all over the internet until we reached Tampa. I was captivated by your strength, courage, and passion, Helen admitted, staring over the roof of the car at Michaela.
Michaela shook her head.
I just wanted to go home, she whispered, lost in memory. Your journey gave others the strength to believe in themselves, Michaela. I knew then that no voyage comes without danger. Mine was to follow in my father's footsteps. I just needed the courage to believe in myself, Helen replied in a soft voice. I still think I should have drowned Tyrell, Michaela stubbornly muttered, pulling open the door and sliding into the car.
Chapter 8. Henry shivered and rolled to his side. He didn't know what hurt worse, his head or his wrist. He decided that each part of his body hurt just as much as the next, so he just checked off on the mental list he was making of his injuries that he was just in pain. He pushed himself up off the floor in a sitting position and scooted backwards until his back was pressed against the hull of the boat.
More like a great big bloody ship, not a boat, he muttered, wincing when he tried to move his fingers. Hell's bells, you've got yourself in a doozy of a mess this time, Henry Summerlin.
He glanced around the area, trying to see if he could figure out what in the hell was going on and where he was. The room was lit by a single light bulb that swayed back and forth, and the floor rumbled under him. There was a slight dampness in the air. If he had to guess, he was either a long way from the dock, or the bay was rougher than it had been. The metal hull behind him was cool to the touch, He suspected he was below the water level. The room was bare for the most part. There were a few pieces of broken wood, probably left over from some wooden crate or pallet. A loud hiss escaped him when he stood. The room rocked dangerously back and forth for a moment. Henry placed his good hand on the side of the hull to steady himself, until the waves in his head settled down. The first thing he needed to do was stabilize his wrist. Crossing over to where he could see the pieces of discarded wood, he found a couple that looked like they might work. He picked them up and staggered back to where he had first regained consciousness. Sliding down the metal wall, he pulled out the rag he had tucked into his back pocket earlier and folded it into a long 2-inch-wide band. Next, he braced his broken wrist on his knees and carefully felt it with his fingers. He could feel where the ulna was broken. It wasn't bad, but it would need to be pushed back into place if he wanted to stabilize it enough to wrap it. Sweat broke out on his brow, and he gritted his teeth together. Aligning his thumb over the slight lump where the bone was broken, he wrapped his other fingers around his damaged wrist. He drew in a deep breath through his nose and pushed. Tears clouded his vision, and a low, guttural moan escaped him when the resulting wave of pain hit him, pushed the breath he had just drawn out of his lungs. A shudder went through his body. Tilting his head back, he closed his eyes, willing the pain to pass. In his mind, he tried to focus on all the horrible things he would love to inflict on the slender man with the Arctic expression and his mysterious employer.
"God, Mary Rose, that hurt," he muttered, opening his eyes and blinking away the tears. "Almost as much as the time I put a nail through my foot and you had to pull it out. Do you remember that? Of course you do. You never forgot anything."
Feeling more composed, he shakily picked up the rag he had folded and placed it on his lap. Next, he placed one of the 4-inch by 1-inch scraps of wood he had found on the rag. Laying his broken wrist on the wood, he braced it with another piece before he bent forward and used his teeth and his good hand to wrap the rag securely around the makeshift splint. Only when he was finished did he relax back against the hull for a moment. A wry smile curved his lips, and he felt along his pocket. His fingers closed over a small, round container. He clumsily reached in and pulled it out. Using his teeth, he gripped the top and twisted it free.
"This might not be morphine, but at least it's better than nothing," he grunted in triumph.
Henry tapped out 2 painkillers onto his lap. He picked up the small red pills and popped them into his mouth. Recapping the plastic container, he slid it back into his pocket.
"So, what do you have to work with, Henry?"
he quietly asked himself.
"Painkillers, a dirty rag, a couple of pieces of broken wood, a pocket knife, and some change that you found when you were crawling on the floor." "Not much, old boy," he answered himself with a shake of his head,
before he laid it back and closed his eyes.
"Michaela, I hope you are safe, girl. I hope you're safe."
Henry could feel his body starting to relax. The pain medication was taking the edge off of his throbbing wrist and head, while the brace was providing some support and relief. He shifted on the hard, cold floor. At the moment, he felt every one of his almost 70 years on the planet. He shook his head. He couldn't stop the darkness that was clouding the edges of his vision. He finally gave up and gave into it. Ren Lu stared through the binoculars at the marina. He had sent 2 men back to the sailboat. Their mission was to make sure that the body of the woman remained hidden and to search the sailboat for the canvas bags the old man had been carrying. His gaze swept along the dock. He scanned over the bicycle the woman had been riding before moving on to the parking lot. A frown creased his brow, and he quickly returned his attention back to the bike. He increased the zoom, staring at it. His lips tightened. He reached for the radio at his waist and pulled it free. "Check the bike," he ordered. The woman had bags filled with groceries. His gaze followed the 2 men in the inflatable dinghy. They were tying off the boat and climbing up onto the dock. They separated, one heading down the dock toward the bike while the other one moved to the sailboat. "The baskets are empty," the man checking the bike responded. There are bags of groceries scattered on the sailboat, the other man said. Wet clothes are piled on the floor. It looks like they belong to a woman.
Renlu's hand tightened on the binoculars. A muscle in his jaw twitched.
His gut feeling had been correct. The woman was alive, but it was worse than that. She was connected with the old man. There had been nothing in the original manifests about two passengers. The report had just mentioned the old man.
Check the bags for the package, he ordered, in a terse tone.
Affirmative, the man on the sailboat replied.
Renlu continued to scan the area. The first man had joined the other. He ignored the bite of the wind and the spray of the water that was kicked up. His focus was on the sailboat.
Nothing, the man finally replied.
Renlu gritted his teeth in annoyance. A movement further up near the main building of the marina caught his attention. He turned his gaze to the dark blue car. It approached the parking area and slowed. He couldn't see the two occupants at first, just that there was a driver and one passenger.
His gut twisted.
Pressing the button on the side of the radio, he waited until the car pulled to a stop.
You have company, he said.
Affirmative, the man replied.
Renlu kept his attention on the car. The men were highly trained and would get out without being seen. A low hiss escaped him when the car doors opened and two women stepped out of it. He immediately recognized Detective Helen Wu. He made it his business to know who could and could not be bought. He turned the binoculars toward the other woman. He immediately recognized her as well. She should be dead. He never missed his target. His gaze swept over her when she walked toward the dock. She was gesturing toward the bike and pointing to where she had fallen in the water. A minute later, both women disappeared from view when they climbed onto the sailboat. Lowering the binoculars, he stared across the bay. He didn't move when he heard the sound of footsteps approaching over the wind. He finally turned when the man who had approached cleared his throat.
What is it? Renlu asked in a deadly quiet tone.
The information you requested has arrived, the man stated.
Renlu turned away from the side.
There was a woman with the old man. Find out who she is, he ordered coldly. And Mr. Aris, this time, make sure I have all the information that I request.
Yes, sir, Aris replied with a bow.
Renlu watched the man walk away. He had begun to personally vet all the members of the security team who had worked for his predecessor. Unfortunately, he had only been in this position for a few days and had not yet completed his review. The information that he had been relying on had come from reports generated before his promotion. Regardless, he knew his employer would not see it that way. His hand automatically went to his pocket when his cell phone vibrated. He pulled it out, knowing that the very man he was thinking of would be on the other end. Tapping the access code, he held the phone to his ear and listened.
No, the information has not yet been retrieved, Renlu replied, in a voice devoid of emotion. I am working on the situation. It will be resolved shortly.
Yes, Mr. Sun. I am fully aware of the consequences if I should fail.
Renlu pressed the power button on the side of the phone when the line went dead. His gaze returned once more to the marina.
Sometimes it was just better to take care of things yourself, he thought.
Chapter 9 Michaela froze on the step leading down into the galley. Her gaze was locked on the scattered items that she had purchased from the market. Her hand trembled on the teak handle that she was holding. Her eyes zeroed in on her wet clothes. They had been moved.
Someone's been here since I left, she whispered, turning to look at the woman with her. Things have been moved.
Helen nodded and pulled the gun at her waist. Her gaze moved over the items. She jerked her head toward the bow of the sailboat.
It's the sleeping area, Michaela murmured, glancing around. I had thrown the bags on the bench seats, but all of the items were still in the bags. My clothes, I had dropped in a pile outside of the head.
Stay here, Helen ordered, stepping over the items scattered all over the floor. Michaela watched the detective search the front section of the sailboat. She returned and shook her head. Michaela glanced around the area. "I found blood there," she said, pointing to the area near her clothes. Helen glanced around to where she was pointing. She bent and studied the spot. Michaela started to look away when a scrap of paper sticking out from the pocket of her wet jeans caught her attention. She bent and gently pulled it free. It was the piece of paper Brian had given her earlier that afternoon. Her gaze moved to the darkness that had already descended outside. It seemed a lifetime ago. She turned the paper over. The number was blurred from the water, but she could still read it. She carefully tucked it into the back pocket of her jeans with her cell phone before turning her gaze to Detective Wu.
"I've called for a crime scene team. Please do not touch anything else. They will need to go through the sailboat," Helen said.
Michaela glanced around her and shook her head.
"The men were all wearing gloves. I don't imagine they changed that when they came back. It looks like they were searching for something," she said in a husky voice. "Can I at least put up the groceries?"
Michaela could see the hesitation on the other woman's face before she shook her head in apology. She understood why. It was just that she felt so helpless. The mess was making the situation seem worse.
"The team will be here for several hours. Once they have completed their investigation, you can clean up the area," Helen explained in a tone filled with compassion.
Michaela nodded, looking out at the light rain that was falling. It almost seemed like a waste of time. Anything outside would have been washed away, and the inside? Well, she didn't have much confidence in the police finding anything there, either. A shiver ran through her, followed by another one, and then another one. Michaela knew that shock was beginning to set in. She suddenly needed to get away. She couldn't breathe. Turning, she climbed up the steps and out into the light rain. She pulled the hood up on the slicker she was wearing and stood indecisively looking around.
"Michaela,"
Helen began, stopping when Michaela turned to look at her.
"You said that it would take the crew a couple of hours to do their thing, right?"
Michaela asked in a strained voice.
"Yes," Helen replied. "You have my number," Michaela said. "Call me when you're done and I'll come back." "Where are you going?" Helen asked in concern. "It is not safe to be out on the streets alone at night." "There's a cafe about a mile from here. I'll go there. I can get a cab to take me and bring me back," Michaela whispered, suddenly needing to be alone. "I'll stay in the cafe."
"I will have one of my men take you,"
Helen instructed, nodding to the assortment of vehicles pulling up in the parking lot.
"I would take you, but I must oversee the investigation."
"I understand. Thank you,"
Michaela whispered, turning when several men and women came up to the stern of the Defiance. Helen issued a swift order in Cantonese to one of the men. He nodded and looked at Michaela. Once again, Michaela felt the isolation of being in a foreign country.
"Officer Lee will take you to the cafe. I ask that you remain there until I call," Helen Wu emphasized. "Until we know what has happened to your grandfather, Michaela, you could also be in danger."
"I won't leave until you call," Michaela promised.
"Thank you, Michaela. I promise we will do everything we can to find your grandfather," Helen said.
Michaela nodded and turned to follow Officer Lee. She kept her head down to shield her face from the rain. A brief smile of thanks curved her lips when Officer Lee opened the passenger door for her before hurrying around to the driver's side. The journey to the market was remarkably fast compared to riding the bike. Michaela murmured her thanks and slid out of the car. Minutes later, she was seated in the almost deserted cafe, her hands wrapped around another steaming hot cup of tea. Ren Lu sat in his car that was parked across from the cafe. He had followed the long line of police vehicles into the marina and parked a short distance away. He wasn't afraid that the police would find the item that had been stolen by Harrington. Unless they knew what they were looking for, they would overlook it. It had not been in the bags, so either the old man had hidden it or the girl had it. His gut was telling him the latter. He watched the girl through the window. She looked tired, sitting with her head bowed and her hands wrapped around her drink. He glanced down at his watch. It was 2100 hours.
The cafe was open 24 hours, and the few people that had ventured out were beginning to leave. He would wait until there were fewer witnesses to deal with, and then he would go inside. Ren Lu glanced down and pulled up the file that he had requested. A frown creased his brow when he saw an image of the girl when she was younger, standing on the same sailboat from the marina. His gaze was focused on the expression on her face. It was a haunting image. She was at the helm, with her hair blowing and the ocean behind her. Whoever had taken the photograph had captured the moment perfectly. Ren Lu was surprised at the jerk of emotion it drew from him. He began reading the attached article. Michaela Summerlin stole her grandfather's sailboat in a single act of defiance that would change her life and touch the lives of millions. Ren Lu glanced back at the image, feeling, once again, a spark of emotion. The frown on his brow deepened. He read the article. It gave him a better understanding of the woman on the dock who had defied death. When he was finished, he returned his gaze to the cafe. His eyes narrowed when he saw her paying the waitress and gathering her coat. He opened the door to his car and slid out. Glancing back and forth, he waited until the traffic cleared to cross it. His hand slid into the pocket of his coat, and he wrapped his fingers around the grip of the gun. Michaela watched the police car pull away from the curb before she stepped up to the door of the cafe. Pulling the door open, she stepped inside and looked around. There were only a handful of people in it now. She walked over to one of the booths, slid her rain slicker off, and tossed it on the seat before sitting down. Almost immediately, a waitress came to take her order.
"Hot tea, please," Michaela requested in a soft, tired voice. "Would you like anything else?" the waitress asked when she placed the tea on the table. "A time machine?" Michaela responded, before shaking her head in wry amusement. "No, nothing, thank you."
The waitress nodded and disappeared around the counter. Michaela tiredly pushed back her tangled hair with a grimace. She had forgotten that she still hadn't brushed it out. It was going to be a bear to get all the knots out now that it was dry. She absently finger-combed it with one hand while pulling her cell phone out of her pocket with the other. A piece of paper dropped onto the table. It had been stuck to her cell phone when she pulled it out. Unfolding the paper, she stared at the blurry numbers.
Brian. He worked at the U.S. consulate. He might know what to do, and at the moment, he was the only one she knew in the country.
A part of her was afraid to call him, but the rational side of her knew she had no other choice. This wasn't about her or the feeling she was trying to hide from. It was about Henry and bringing him home safe and sound. She pulled her hand free from her hair and carefully pressed the numbers. Her hand trembled slightly when she lifted the phone and pressed it to her ear. He answered on the third ring.
"This is Brian," he said.
"Brian?"
Michaela's voice faded when her throat tightened with emotion.
"Brian, this is Michaela."
"Michaela, I'm glad you called." His voice brightened in surprise and pleasure, and she felt the familiar pull of his deep voice on her emotions.
"Brian, I need your help. Something's happened,"
she whispered in a thick voice, the tears and emotion she had been controlling threatening to break through the wall she had built around them. She cleared her throat.
"I'm at the cafe we were in this afternoon."
"I'm on my way," Brian replied. "Don't leave. It will take me about 45 minutes to get there."
"I won't leave. I'll wait," Michaela promised.
"Are you in danger?" Brian asked in a clear, hard voice, sounding different than she remembered.
"I don't know. I might be," Michaela replied honestly.
"Stay where there are a lot of people," Brian ordered. "I'm on my way."
Michaela hung up the phone and bowed her head. Her hair fell forward, shielding her face in a curtain of dark, brown, tangled strands. She closed her eyes and drew in deep, calming breaths. It was important that she stay focused. She sat back and opened her purse to pull out the small notepad she had in it. A grimace escaped her when she realized it was still damp from her swim earlier. She pushed it back in, pausing when it wouldn't slide in as easily as it had slid out. She caught sight of the problem. It was the small box that had been in the canvas bag. She pulled the box out and tucked it in the inside pocket of her rain slicker. Once it was out of the way, the notepad slid into the small purse with no issues. She pulled out a pen and fastened the clasp on her purse once more. Reaching for one of the paper menus from behind the box of napkins, she turned it over. It was blank on the back. With meticulous care, she began recording everything she could remember on it, including a small sketch of the face of the man who had shot at her. She jumped when her cell phone vibrated. Glancing at it, she was surprised to see that almost 40 minutes had passed. She touched the screen and saw the text message from Brian. He would be there in less than 10 minutes. Michaela looked up when she saw the waitress heading toward her table again and decided it would be best to pay and wait just outside the cafe. It had a large overhang that covered the metal chairs and small tables right in front of the large pane glass window. She reached over and grabbed her rain slicker. Pulling it on, she reached into her purse and drew out several coins. She picked up the bill and walked over to the cashier. With a murmur to keep the change, she pulled the hood of the slicker up over her head and pushed the door open. Michaela turned left and walked to the end of the set of tables before stepping behind one and leaning against the rough bricks of the building. She was just by the edge of the window and could see the waitress talking to another worker behind the counter. A chilly breeze of damp mist blew past her, and she shivered. She reached into her pocket and pulled out her cell phone to check the time. It was a little after 10 o'clock. She slid her hand and the phone back into her pocket, grateful for the warmth of her jacket, and glanced down the street in the direction she thought Brian would come from. Her body stiffened suddenly when she felt a hand wrap around the inside of her arm and something hard pressed against her side. She slowly turned her head until her gaze locked with a pair of cold, dark brown eyes. She automatically tried to pull free, but his fingers tightened in warning. "I wouldn't, Miss Summerlin," the man remarked in a cool voice. Michaela frowned, anger building up and overriding her fear. Anger at the man for hurting Henry, anger at his callous disregard for life, anger that he felt he had the right to harm another. It was misguided, but it was there, and she grabbed the emotion with everything she had inside her, because she knew if she let the fear take over, she would be dead. "Where is my grandfather?" she hissed. "What do you want?" The man studied her mutinous face. She lifted her chin, daring him to deny that he was responsible for Henry's disappearance. For a brief moment, his cold anger changed to something else. Something that she didn't understand, before his face hardened again. "You," he replied, in a clipped tone, before pressing his lips together in a tight, straight line, as if he was surprised by his reply. "Great, a pervert on top of being a criminal," she muttered under her breath with a shake of her head and looked away from him. Chapter 10. Her softly muttered statement both amused Renlew and tantalized him. His fingers tightened on her arm, and his eyes narrowed in annoyance at the unexpected reaction he had to the woman glaring back at him. This could create a problem if he wasn't careful. Distracted by his thoughts, he didn't notice the car that suddenly swerved up onto the curb. His head turned toward the glare of the headlights at the same time that pain exploded through his groin. He released his hold on Michaela's arm when she jerked her elbow down and pushed against his chest. Renlew stumbled back into the shadows just as a man threw open the door of the car and jumped out. He slid further back into the alley when he saw the gun in the man's hand. Twisting, he disappeared into the darkness. Michaela reacted instinctively when she saw the car coming. She used the distraction to turn into the man holding her and drove her knee into his groin. She had hoped the move would put him on the ground, but it hadn't. It did give her the chance to pull away from him. Placing both hands on his chest, she had pushed him away from her before turning toward Brian. She almost stopped when she saw Brian emerge from the car with a gun in his hand. Shocked, she forced her body into motion when he yelled at her to get in the car. A grunt of annoyance escaped her when she started for the wrong side of the car, forgetting in her moment of panic that the driver and passenger sides were reversed to the States. Jerking the passenger side door open, she scrambled in and slammed the door, locking it for good measure. Her eyes widened when she saw Brian disappear into the dark alley. Afraid that something might happen to him, she fumbled to unlock the door. She was just opening the door again when he reappeared. She watched him look both ways and slide the gun he was holding behind his back. Her gaze followed him as he walked back to the car. He pulled the door open further and slid into the car before shutting the door. "Brian?" she started to say. He shot her a look and shook his head. "Not yet, Michaela. I want to get you out of here," he muttered in a terse tone. "Then I want to know what in the hell is going on." Michaela nodded, glancing back at the cafe as he pulled away. The waitress from earlier and several other people were standing near the front window, excitedly talking and pointing. She turned back around and sank back against the seat in exhaustion. Raising a hand to her brow, she rubbed it. "Are you okay? Did he hurt you?" Brian asked, in a harsh, clipped tone.
"What? No. Well, yes, earlier, but not now," she admitted in a distracted voice.
"Earlier?" he gritted out the question between clenched teeth. When he slid around a corner on the wet pavement, Michaela decided it might be safer to wait. She glanced at his face, then down to the hand on the stick shift. His knuckles were white. She fumbled for her seatbelt when she realized that she had forgotten to put it on, and an alarm began to ping. They traveled several blocks at a dizzying speed before Brian slowed the car down. She noticed that he kept looking in the rearview mirror. Instinctively, she glanced over her shoulder to see if anyone was following them. "No one's following us," he said, almost as if he was reading her mind.
"Oh, good," she murmured, folding her hands in her lap. "Thank you for coming."
Brian took several more turns before he pulled to the side of the road along a line of empty parking spaces. Michaela glanced up, surprised to see that they were in what looked like a business district. Tall skyscrapers lined each side of the road, and, unlike most popular tourist areas with their bright neon lights, the area was more subdued. He shifted the car into neutral and sat looking out at the darkened streets. It had begun to rain again, causing the street lights to take on an eerie glow through the windshield. She bit her bottom lip when she saw the muscle throbbing in his jaw and his fingers flexing on the steering wheel. He finally drew in a deep breath and released it before he let go of the steering wheel and turned to look at her. "What happened?" he asked in a quiet, controlled voice. Michaela pushed back the hood of her slicker and turned as much as she could to face him with the seatbelt on. Swallowing, she slowly began telling him about the events that had occurred after she had returned from the market. She reached into her pocket and pulled out the folded menu and held it out.
"I wrote down everything I could remember so I wouldn't forget," she whispered, suddenly drained. "I tried, Brian."
Her voice broke on his name, and she drew in a shuddering breath and wiped an impatient hand across her damp cheek, only then realizing that she was crying.
"I tried to stop them from taking him, but I couldn't."
Brian took the folded paper from her hand and set it on the console between them. Reaching up, he slid his hand along her cheek. Michaela turned her face into his warmth, needing the contact.
"I know you did, Michaela," he replied in a rough tone. "You did the right thing. I'm just glad you're safe."
Michaela's gaze rose to meet Brian's eyes in the dim lighting. Her lips parted, and she drew in a swift breath when he leaned forward and pressed a warm, gentle kiss to her lips. It had been a long time since she'd felt this way. 3 years, to be exact. 2 hours later, Brian quietly closed the door to the bedroom where Michaela was finally sleeping. He walked across the small efficiency apartment, grabbing the computer bag he had placed on the barstool when they entered. Crossing over to the couch, he turned on the small lamp sitting on the end table next to the couch before he sank down onto the rich leather and pulled the laptop out. He booted it up and entered his passcode. He reached into his pocket and pulled out the folded menu that Michaela had given him in the car. He quickly scanned the information she had written down. A swift shaft of admiration shot through him at the details she had placed into categories, as if she were documenting information on a new species of marine life that she had discovered. His gaze froze on the sketch of the man she had drawn. Picking up the paper, he studied the face. She had gone into great detail on the man's eyes. He reached for his phone and snapped a picture of the image. Airdropping it into his account, he quickly accessed the databases he needed. Clicking and dragging the image, he dropped it into the search. He pressed the enter key. He minimized the screen while the facial recognition program ran and brought up another image, one that he had been working on late this afternoon. His lips tightened when his phone buzzed. Picking it up, he slid his fingers across the screen. He held the phone to his ear and waited. "No change," the voice stated. "Increase security. No one who hasn't been cleared goes in or out of his room," Brian instructed, rising from the couch and walking over to the window. "Already done. Have you found out anything?" the voice on the other end asked. "Another incident came up that may be connected," Brian said, glancing at his computer screen. "I'm following a new lead." "Report your findings as soon as you can confirm," the voice replied. "You are the only field agent assigned to this case now." "Affirmative," Brian said in a toneless voice and disconnected the call. Returning to the couch, he sat down and stared at the grainy image of Gabriel Harrington and an older man, a man who he knew all too well. His gaze moved down to Harrington's left hand that was partially hidden inside one of the canvas bags that Henry Summerlin was holding while his right hand kept Henry still. Brian lowered the screen when he heard the soft ping from the search he had been running. Pulling up the screen, he stared into the face of a young man, a young Chinese officer named Chang Li Zhang. Brian clicked on the image. There was little information except for his possible date of birth. He had been in an orphanage until the age of 9, and the brief listing of his service record. What drew Brian's attention was Zhang's listed date of death. He clicked on it. Zhang was listed as having been killed when the helicopter carrying 10 other men and him had crashed during a training mission. There were no survivors. Brian closed the lid of the laptop when he heard a faint whimper. Rising up off the couch, he strode back across the living room. He paused outside of the bedroom door, his hand on the doorknob, while his other hand pressed against the doorframe. Once again, a soft whimper sounded on the other side. Twisting the door handle, he quietly pushed open the door and glanced toward the bed. Michaela was sitting up with her hands over her face and her hair falling forward to frame her face. She was breathing heavily, and the bed sheets were twisted around her. Brian walked across the room and sat down on the edge of the bed, grabbing Michaela's right hand when it shot out. A reluctant smile tugged at his lips at her wide-eyed expression. He reached up with his other hand and ran it tenderly across her cheek. "You're safe," he promised, gently rubbing her cheek with his thumb.
"I was in the water again, only this time I couldn't swim to the top," she whispered, blinking several times to clear her vision. "I dreamed the bullet hit me."
"Shush," Brian murmured, shifting so he could pull her closer to him. "You're safe."
"What if they've killed him, Brian?" Michaela asked in a broken voice. "He's just an ordinary old man. Henry wouldn't hurt anyone. What did they want with him?"
"I don't know," Brian said, "but I'll do everything I can to find out. I promise, Michaela."
Michaela leaned her head against his shoulder and released a shuddering breath before she slowly lay back against the pillows, suddenly exhausted again. She knew part of it was because she was still suffering from jet lag, but the other part was just the emotional drain. Still, she didn't want to be alone.
"Brian, will you hold me?"
she whispered, staring up at him. Brian's throat tightened with emotion. He knew it took a lot for Michaela to admit that she didn't want to be alone, that she needed to be held, that she was feeling vulnerable. This was something he knew would be difficult for Michaela. The glimpse of her vulnerability and her hesitant plea only made his need to comfort her stronger. He motioned for her to slide over and pulled back the covers. He kicked off his shoes and slid under the covers, pulling them up over the two of them and tucking the sides, making sure that Michaela was covered before he wrapped his arm around her when she turned her back to him.